You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Thursday edition, and I believe, and I'm hoping, please, I'm hoping that this is the very last day of the so-called impeachment hearings. Now, I could be wrong. Adam Schiff might call some more witnesses. He's looking for a crime. He hasn't found any crime. He hasn't found an impeachment offense. And he certainly hasn't presented any evidence that one occurred. We've heard for the last couple of days a lot of opinions, speculations, presumptions, assumptions. Many of these people were not on the telephone call. Why they were witnesses escapes me. Rather disconcerting when all the networks carry these hearings. But what has happened day after day after day, fewer and fewer and fewer of the American people are listening because they're unconvinced that President Trump committed any crime. What we have here, and just to put it in context, I'll repeat one more time, this is a big cover-up. Of what? The 2016 election, where the Clinton campaign, together with the Obama administration, conspired to dig up dirt on Donald Trump as a knockout punch so he would never get elected president. But in so doing, they all assumed that Hillary Clinton would win. That assumption made an ass out of them. Why? The fact that she lost meant that once Trump assumed the office, he would over time eventually, and it's going to be eventually, I think next year for sure, get to what happened in 2016. The American people were spied on by the Obama administration. Now, that was primarily, but not entirely, Donald Trump and the Republicans involved in his campaign. It is illegal for government employees, including the president, to use the capabilities, the people, the assets of the intelligence community. And remember, there are 17 entities in that community. The key one here is the FBI, Department of Justice, the Central Intelligence Agency, the National Security Agency, and others, to spy. Surveil is the more technical preferred word, but spy on the American people, and that includes the Republican Party and the people involved in Donald Trump's campaign. And they came up with nothing, absolutely nothing. In a way, it reminds me of a person with a dirty mind. And the Democrats' dirty mind is that Donald Trump was conspiring with the Russians. They just had to get the evidence. It was out there. The FBI investigated for over a year and came up with absolutely nothing. So did the Mueller investigation that, quite frankly, should never have been started. There was no evidence at all that Donald Trump conspired with the Russians. And that was ultimately the conclusion after spending over $30 million, close to $40 million, again investigating Donald Trump and again coming up empty. Oh, yes, there were some processed crimes where people either misled or lied. lie to the FBI, but even those I think are questionable, and several of them I think are going to be reversed. The key point here, there have been several investigations of Donald Trump. They were all searching for a crime that he committed. And once they discovered the crime, ideally before the 2016 election, they thought that was going to be the knockout punch, but they came up empty. Even though Hillary Clinton and the Democratic National Committee paid money, millions, to Christopher Steele, who in turn paid Russians for information, really disinformation, that no one can prove or disprove. He tried to peddle that information to big lie media, but they didn't bite. Why didn't they bite? They knew if they published it, they would be sued. You better believe they would have been sued. So instead, they set up President-elect Donald Trump. The intelligence community briefed him, and this is early January of 2017. And James Comey gave him a little bit, not the entire dossier, the Christopher Steele dossier, that you can go online and look up for yourself, just to show President-elect Trump what was out there. The FBI, when it got the application for a warrant to spy on the American people, starting with Carter Page, did not have any evidence and did not try to verify, because they couldn't verify this raw, so-called raw intelligence. That's how Christopher Steele characterized it. He couldn't verify it. He didn't know if it was true or not true. That's the same problem the newspapers and the television news networks had. It was, in essence, rumors, disinformation provided by the Russians, paid for by Hillary Clinton, that first failed to provide the necessary dirt, leverage is what they call it, that was supposed to guarantee her election. It didn't. And then they repurposed it to try to smear Trump. That's what this is about. It's a smear campaign with the intention, motivation of what? An impeachment. By now, they thought President Trump would have been impeached. Last time I checked, he's still president of the United States. See, President Trump, Donald J. Trump, knew he hadn't conspired with the Russians. Even though he's been falsely accused of being a traitor and conspiring with the Russians, there's absolutely no proof of that. But the big lie has been spread and spread and spread by the Democratic Party and big lie media acting together, and it failed. The Mueller report is unambiguous. There was no evidence that Donald Trump or any in the Republican Party were conspiring with the Russians. So they had to do something, because for over 2 years, big lie media has been spreading the lie to everybody, including the Democratic base. Most Americans, I would say the majority of the American people, never believed it. I always had an open mind, but I really didn't believe it. But if you can show me the evidence of a crime, I'm willing to listen. I think most fair-minded Americans would listen. But the Democrats, especially what I call the Reds, the radical extremist Democrat socialists, came up with nothing, nothing. Yet they continue to lie and misrepresent the facts. The biggest example of this is the chairman, Adam Schiff, in the House Intelligence Committee that's running this impeachment hearing, parodied, and that's his word, not mine, I would use lie, when the American people were watching him on television. And instead of reading the transcript that President Trump declassified so the whole world could see exactly what he said to the newly elected Ukrainian President Zelensky, he lied. I think if it were anybody else, he should have lost his chairmanship as a minimum, been censored, and I would have thrown him out of the House. In my mind, that was beyond the pale, but no. They're marching off a cliff and want to impeach him, no matter what the facts are. They don't care what the facts are. That's what you need to understand. And yes, they have dirty minds. What they're doing is disgraceful, because they still have nothing. And we're going to learn how bad it is. This is a cover-up, but it's also a second time, a coup, to try to impeach Trump. And I believe it's been a total, complete failure. But will they continue down this road and off the cliff? That remains to be seen. I don't think so. I really don't. Because what's happened is the American people did listen for a while, and nothing of substance, real substance, has come out. The best evidence is the memorandum of conversation, a rough transcript or near transcript of the conversation. There was no quid pro quo. Donald Trump didn't want a quid pro quo. He doesn't need it. And even if there were, it's not a crime. Why? The American people, its taxpayers, taxpayer money through its Congress authorized military or security assistance to Ukraine. But whoever's president has to assure that the money gets spent for what Congress appropriated. And the big concern with Ukraine under both Democrat and Republican administrations is corruption. And that's the problem with why I'm, as a general matter, totally against any foreign aid, because too much of it gets appropriated, stolen by whatever government or dictator we give the money. The only exception seems to be when we give money or military equipment to the regime. In this case, the Ukrainians were fighting the Russians, and the Russians have a lot of tanks and armored equipment. The war still goes on in East, Northeast Ukraine. People are dying, and what the Ukrainians want is a defensive weapon that can destroy Russian tanks and armored vehicles. Now, some have called this lethal military aid. Fair enough, that's what it is. It's a weapon, and weapons are designed to kill or destroy the enemy and his weapons. And that's what the Javelin missile system does. It's very, very effective, and that's what the Ukrainians wanted, because they're up against Russian tanks and armored vehicles, and this weapon would do severe damage to both the tanks and the armored vehicles that have people in them. It's a weapon of war, but it's a defensive weapon, and they were defending their country against an invasion by the Russians. Although they like to call them irregulars, they're Russians. Donald Trump, unlike Barack Obama, gave them the lethal aid. There was no announcement of an investigation, which I would say is totally justified. The Ukrainians interfered in our 2016 election, as did the Russians. They both interfered in our 2016 election. The Russians far more than the Ukrainians. No one's denying that. And the Republicans, when they control the House, the Intelligence Committee, publish a report on it. But very little was done under Obama to stop it. They could have stopped it by putting a spotlight on it during the election, but they chose not to. Only after the election did they take any real action. So President Trump was very reluctant to give any aid to the Ukraine, given its interference in our 2016 election. Now, that's not the current government and Zelensky. This is prior governments. The people of the Ukraine overthrow their government in an election when they voted overwhelmingly for Zelensky. They were tired of the corruption. Donald Trump was tired of the corruption and wanted to assure himself that it would be stopped and the wrongdoers brought to justice, and the Ukraine government, the new one, is trying to stop corruption. People in the past in the parliament that had exemptions from being prosecuted for corruption now are liable for corruption. So once Donald Trump convinced himself by getting information from some of his key advisors, his personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, his vice president, Mike Pence, his secretary of state, Mike Pompeo, initially delayed the sending of the aid, but it only lasted slightly less than 8 weeks, and they got their security assistance or military aid. There was no quid pro quo, but like I said, even if there were, so what? It's done all the time. Aid, foreign aid, is always conditional. There are conditions or terms attached to it. So even if you could prove there was a quid pro quo, so what? It was entirely legitimate for the President of the United States to insist that if we give you this aid, you need to address the corruption in the Ukraine, and they're doing it. So again, the Democrats come up empty. A lot of smoke, but no fire. There never was. Truth be known, there is no impeachable offense, no crime. And what do they do from here? Well, normally, if they want to pursue impeachment, they need to first call a vote. And the call a vote, they need to have articles of impeachment spelling out what the crimes are. They haven't done that yet. Keep in mind, this is an impeachment inquiry. They have yet to have a vote on impeachment, and that requires specifying the articles of impeachment. In other words, the crimes, the high crimes and misdemeanors that Trump did. They don't have it. They haven't had the vote. And to the extent that you have a vote, what is it going to be? It's largely going to be along partisan lines. Republicans are not going to vote for impeachment, and I think many Democrats won't either. Now, that doesn't mean the Democrats who control the House couldn't get at least 218, maybe a little more, Democrats to vote for it. They only need 218. Maybe they get 218. Maybe they don't, but they're not going to get many more. But what happens then? That's the next step. It goes over to the Senate. And there's no way that they can get 20 Republicans, and that's what they would need, assuming all Democratic senators vote guilty. But how can you vote for some non-existent crime? You can accuse people of any crime. So what? You got to have evidence, and they don't. That's the dilemma. They don't have any evidence of a crime. I would say all Republicans and many wise Democrats wouldn't vote for it because they're all up for a re-election in the House, and a third in the Senate are. And many of these districts voted by majorities for Trump. So what I think will happen is elections have consequences. And because the Democrats have failed to even provide substantial evidence of a crime, if they go forward with this, they will lose. The Republicans will vote down an impeachment. And I think they might get some Democrat senators as well, especially those up for re-election. Why are they so desperately doing this? Why? It gets back to the 2016 election and the spying by the government, your government, my government, spying on the American people. All of that is going to come out. It's the biggest political scandal in U.S. history. And who authorized it? President Barack Obama. And who were the conspirators, the plotters? High government officials. Attorney General Lynch, FBI Director Comey, their deputies in the Department of Justice, Sally Yates, in the FBI, McCabe, the Central Intelligence Agency, John Brennan, and in the White House, the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper. And who in the White House besides the President? Oh, the National Security Advisor, Susan Rice, some ambassadors, some deputies, their staffs. They all were in on the spying of Donald Trump, and they authorized it. They like to say it was legal because the FISA court authorized it. And you're going to hear that. We were just following the instructions of the president, and it was authorized. And we got the warrant. What are you complaining about? Well, just a minute. The FBI is supposed to verify the evidence in the warrant, and that's the Christopher Steele dossier, largely. And they didn't. They couldn't. That's requirement one. But the bigger admission, by far, they footnoted, but it's a vague footnote. No, this is opposition research. What the Democratic National Committee and the Hillary Clinton campaign were paying for is opposition research. And through their law firm, they hired Fusion GPS, who in turn hired Christopher Steele, a foreign intelligence agent of British intelligence that retired over 10 years ago. And he got information. He didn't go to Russia. He got information from Russians. Turns out government. And he was set up. He bought it, packaged it, and that became the so-called, initially was called the Trump-Russian dossier. But it wasn't a dossier. It was just rumors, several of them packaged together in one memo that's now called the Christopher Steele dossier. And it didn't have any effect on the 2016 election results. Why? It couldn't get published. So after the impossible happened, everyone thought that was a Democrat, that Hillary Clinton was going to be the next president and would carry on the legacy of Barack Obama. But a total outsider, never run for public office in his life, won. And because of that, the crimes of the Obama administration and Hillary Clinton will be coming out in 2020 and 2021 when the investigations are concluded and the U.S. Attorney Durham goes to a grand jury, gets indictments, and then pursues it with prosecutions. That is the scandal that the Democrats are trying to prevent the American people from knowing. Many Americans already know it. They get their information not from big lie media, which is staying away from this by keeping you in the dark by not covering it. But people in talk radio and people in the press have been, investigative journalists have been publishing the details. And it's within the next year, 12 months, many of the details will be out. And in 2021, those involved in this conspiracy will be exposed and prosecuted. If they're found guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, they will go to prison by a jury of their peers. So I hope this is the end, but I think Adam Schiff is desperate. He thought he had finally caught Donald Trump, but then the ambassador said, and Trump said, I asked him point blank, what do you want from Ukraine? And the president answered, nothing, nothing. At that point, it was over. Now let's listen in on today's continuing saga, the soap opera, brought to you by the Democratic congressmen and women in the House. Let's listen to the opening statement of Devin Nunes.
Thank you. Throughout these bizarre hearings, the Democrats have struggled to make the case that President Trump committed some impeachable offense on his phone call with Ukrainian President Zelensky. The offense itself changes depending on the day, ranging from quid pro quo to extortion to bribery to obstruction of justice, then back to quid pro quo. It's clear why the Democrats have been forced onto this carousel of accusations. President Trump had good reason to be wary of Ukrainian election meddling against his campaign and of widespread corruption in that country. President Zelensky, who didn't even know aid to Ukraine had been paused at the time of the call, has repeatedly said there was nothing wrong with the conversation. The aid was resumed without the Ukrainians taking the actions they were supposedly being coerced into doing. Aid to Ukraine under President Trump has been much more robust than it was under President Obama, thanks to the provision of Javelin anti-tank weapons. As numerous witnesses have testified, temporary holds on foreign aid occur fairly frequently for many different reasons. So how do we have an impeachable offense here when there's no actual misdeed and no one even claiming to be a victim? The Democrats have tried to solve this dilemma with a simple slogan. He got caught. President Trump, we are to believe, was just about to do something wrong, and getting caught was the only reason he backed down from whatever nefarious thought crime the Democrats are accusing him of almost committing. I once again urge Americans to continue to consider the credibility of the Democrats on this committee who are now hurling these charges. For the last 3 years, it's not President Trump who got caught. It's the Democrat who got caught. They got caught falsely claiming they had more than circumstantial evidence that Trump colluded with Russians to hack the 2016 election. They got caught orchestrating this entire farce with the whistleblower and lying about their secret meetings with him. They got caught defending the false allegations of the Steele dossier, which was paid for by them. They got caught breaking their promise that impeachment would only go forward with bipartisan support because of how damaging it is to the American people. They got caught running a sham impeachment process featuring secret depositions, hidden transcripts, and an unending flood of Democrat leaks to the media. They got caught trying to obtain nude photos of President Trump from Russian pranksters pretending to be Ukrainians. And they got caught covering up for Alexander Chalupa, a Democratic National Committee operative who colluded with Ukrainian officials to smear the Trump campaign by improperly redacting her name from deposition transcripts and refusing to let Americans hear her testimony as a witness in these proceedings. That is the Democrats' pitiful legacy in recent years. They got caught. Meanwhile, their supposed star witness testified that he was guessing that President Trump was tying Ukrainian aid to investigations despite no one telling him that was true. And the president himself explicitly telling him the opposite, that he wanted nothing from Ukraine. Ladies and gentlemen, unless the Democrats once again scramble their kangaroo court rules, today's hearing marks the merciful end of this spectacle in the impeachment committee, formerly known as the Intelligence Committee. Whether the Democrats reap the political benefit they want from this impeachment remains to be seen, but the damage they have done to this country will be long-lasting. With this wrenching attempt to overthrow the president, they have pitted Americans against one another and poisoned the mind of fanatics who actually believe the entire galaxy of bizarre accusations they have leveled against the president since the day the American people elected him. I sincerely hope the Democrats end this affair as quickly as possible so our nation can begin to heal the many wounds it has inflicted on us. The people's faith in government and their belief that their vote counts for something has been shaken. From the Russia hoax to this shoddy Ukrainian sequel, the Democrats got caught. Let's hope they finally learn a lesson, give their conspiracy theories a rest, and focus on governing for a change. In addition, Mr. Chairman, pursuant to House Rule 11, Clause 2J1, the Republican members transmit our request to convene a minority day of hearings. To date, you have blocked key witnesses that we have requested from testifying in this partisan impeachment inquiry. This rule was not displaced by HRS 660, and therefore, under House Rule 11, Clause 1A, it applies to the Democrats' impeachment inquiry. We look forward to the chair promptly scheduling an agreed-upon time for the minority day of hearings so that we can hear from key witnesses that you have continually blocked from testifying. I'd also like to take a quick moment on an assertion Ms. Hill made in the statement that she submitted to this committee, in which she claimed that some committee members deny that Russia meddled in the 2016 election. As I noted in my opening statement on Wednesday, that in March 2018, Intelligence Committee Republicans published the results of a year-long investigation into Russian meddling. The 240-page report analyzed 2016 Russian meddling campaign, the U.S. government reaction to it, Russian campaigns in other countries, and provided specific recommendations to improve American election security. I'm going to ask my staff to hand these reports to our two witnesses today, just so they can have a recollection of their memory. As America may or may not know, Democrats refused to sign on to the Republican report. Instead, they decided to adopt minority views filled with collusion conspiracy theories. Needless to say, it is entirely possible for two separate nations to engage in election meddling at the same time, and Republicans believe we should take meddling seriously by all foreign countries, regardless of which campaign is the target. I'd like to submit for the record a copy of our report titled Report on Russian Active Measures. I yield back.
Now, next, I'm going to play the opening statement of Fiona Hill. She was wrong in what she said, and I'm glad Devin Nunes points this out. And the point to me is clear. Now, she's supposedly an expert on Russia, the Ukraine. She's a foreign intelligence expert, let's put it that way. But it's clear that not only the Russians have been meddling, but so has the Ukraine. And denying that the Ukraine did it is simply a lie, even if an expert says it. I think she was trying to confuse the issue because she understood that Christopher Steele, to use her own words, had been played. By who? The Russians. But who also was played? Many people in the United States government initially thought what Christopher Steele was peddling were true. The FBI went so far as to get a warrant. Did they believe it? Who knows? I think some of them did. But there was no way to verify anything in terms of that Christopher Steele dossier. So let's listen to Fiona Hill's statement. It's short, short relative to the next gentleman's.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Ranking Member Nunes, and members of the committee, thank you for inviting me to testify before you today. I have a short opening statement. I appreciate the importance of Congress's impeachment inquiry, and I'm appearing today as a fact witness, as I did during my deposition on October 14th, in order to answer your questions about what I saw, what I did, what I knew, and what I know with regard to the subjects of your inquiry. I believe that those who have information that the Congress deems relevant have a legal and a moral obligation to provide it. I take great pride in the fact that I'm a non-partisan foreign policy expert who has served under three Republican and Democratic presidents. I have no interest in advancing the outcome of your inquiry in any particular direction except toward the truth. I will not provide a long narrative statement because I believe that the interest of Congress and the American people is best served by allowing you to ask me your questions. And I'm happy to expand upon my October 14th deposition testimony in response to your questions today. But before I do so, I'd like to communicate two things. First, I'd like to share a little bit about who I am. I'm an American by choice, having become a citizen in 2002. I was born in the northeast of England, in the same region that George Washington's ancestors came from. Both my region and my family have deep ties to the United States. My paternal grandfather fought through World War I in the Royal Field Artillery, surviving being shot, shelled, and gassed before American troops intervened to end the war in 1918. During the Second World War, other members of my family fought to defend the free world from fascism alongside American soldiers, sailors, and airmen. The men in my father's family were coal miners, whose families always struggled with poverty. When my father, Alfred, was 14, he joined his father, brothers, brother, uncles and cousins in the coal mines to help put food on the table. When the last of the local mines closed in the 1960s, my father wanted to emigrate to the United States to work in the coal mines in West Virginia and Pennsylvania. But his mother, my grandmother, had been crippled from hard labor, and my father couldn't leave. So he stayed in Northern England until he died in 2012. My mother still lives in my hometown today. While his dream of emigrating to America was thwarted, my father loved America, its culture, its history, and its role as a beacon of hope for the world. He always wanted someone in the family to make it to the United States. I began my university studies in 1984, and I just learned that I went to the same university as my colleague here, Mr. Holmes, in St. Andrews in Scotland. Just thought I would add that. And in 1987, I won a place on an academic exchange to the Soviet Union. I was there for the signing of the Intermediate Nuclear Forces, or INF, treaty, and when President Ronald Reagan met Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev in Moscow. This was a turning point for me. An American professor who I met there told me about graduate student scholarships to the United States, and the very next year, thanks to his advice, I arrived in America to start my advanced studies at Harvard. Years later, I can say with confidence that this country has offered me opportunities I never would have had in England. I grew up poor, with a very distinctive working-class accent. In England, in the 1980s and 1990s, this would have impeded my professional advancement. This background has never set me back in America. For the best part of three decades, I've built a career as a non-partisan, non-political national security professional, focusing on Europe and Eurasia, and especially the former Soviet Union. I've served our country under three presidents, in my most recent capacity under President Trump, as well as in my former position under my former position of National Intelligence Officer for Russia and Eurasia under Presidents George W. Bush and Barack Obama. In that role, I was the intelligence community's senior expert on Russia and the former Soviet republics, including Ukraine. It was because of my background and experience that I was asked to join the National Security Council in 2017. At the NSC, Russia was part of my portfolio, but I was also responsible for coordinating US policy for all of Western Europe, all of Eastern Europe, including Ukraine and Turkey, along with NATO and the European Union. I was hired initially by General Michael Flynn, Katie McFarland, and General Keith Kellogg. But then I started work in April 2017 when General McMaster was the National Security Advisor. I and they thought that I could help them with President Trump's stated goal of improving relations with Russia while still implementing policies designed to deter Russian conduct that threatens the United States, including the unprecedented and successful Russian operation to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. This relates to the second thing I want to communicate. Based on questions and statements I have heard, some of you on this committee appear to believe that Russia and its security services did not conduct a campaign against our country. And that
now, see, this is not true. And this is where she either got it wrong or she's deliberately misleading the American people. She should know better.
Perhaps, somehow, for some reason, Ukraine did. This is a fictional narrative.
No, it's not fictional. That's why I'm leery of her testimony, and I'm glad Nunes pointed it out. It's the Republicans that have been strongest stopping Russian interference, but that doesn't mean the Ukraine didn't interfere in 2016, because they demonstrably did on Hillary Clinton's side. That's why I don't trust this lady because of this. If she's a so-called expert, she should know this. That's why I'm suspicious. She's given her fine resume, but she didn't know of any Ukrainian interference, however you want to characterize it. Meddling? That's nonsense. That's utter nonsense.
Perpetrated and propagated by the Russian security services themselves. The unfortunate truth is that Russia was the foreign power that systematically attacked our democratic institutions in 2016. This is the public conclusion of our intelligence agencies, confirmed in bipartisan congressional reports.
No one disagrees with it, especially the Republicans. They're the ones that were pushing for it, and the minority report were the Democrats. The Obama administration simply wasn't responding to it, and that's why the Republicans wrote the report.
It is beyond dispute, even if some of the underlying details must remain classified. The impact of the successful 2016 Russian campaign remains evident today. Our nation is being torn apart. Truth is questioned. Our highly professional and expert career foreign service is being undermined. U.S. support for Ukraine, which continues to face armed Russian aggression, has been politicized. The Russian government's goal is to weaken our country, to diminish America's global role, and to neutralize a perceived U.S. threat to Russian interests. President Putin and the Russian security services aim to counter U.S. foreign policy objectives in Europe, including in Ukraine, where Moscow wishes to reassert political and economic dominance. I say this not as an alarmist, but as a realist. I do not think long-term conflict with Russia is either desirable or inevitable. I continue to believe that we need to seek ways of stabilizing our relationship with Moscow, even as we counter their efforts to harm us. Right now, Russia's security services and their proxies have geared up to repeat their interference in the 2020 election. We are running out of time to stop them. In the course of this investigation, I would ask that you please not promote politically driven falsehoods that so clearly advance Russian interests. As Republicans and Democrats have agreed for decades, Ukraine is a valued partner of the United States, and it plays an important role in our national security. And as I told the committee last month, I refuse to be part of an effort to legitimize an alternate narrative that the Ukrainian government is a U.S. adversary.
See, this is not an alternative narrative. They're not mutually exclusive. That's what she's trying to say. And yes, the Russians corrupted Ukraine. I would expect them, at least some of them, to be involved. So this raises, pardon the pun, a red flag.
The Ukraine, not Russia, attacked us in 2016. These fictions are harmful even if they're deployed for purely domestic political purposes. President Putin and the Russian security services operate like a super PAC. They deploy millions of dollars to weaponize our own political opposition research and false narratives. When we are consumed by partisan rancor, we cannot combat these external forces as they seek to divide us against each other, degrade our institutions, and destroy the faith of the American people in our democracy. I respect the work that this Congress does in carrying out its constitutional responsibilities, including this inquiry, and I am here to help you to the best of my ability. If the President or anyone else impedes or subverts the national security of the United States in order to further domestic political or personal interests, that's more than worthy of your attention. But we must not let domestic politics stop us from defending ourselves against the foreign powers who truly wish us harm. I'm ready to answer your questions. Thank you. Thank you again, Mr. Chairman.
I want to play just a little because it's 40 minutes of David Holmes. He testified, I believe, Friday, Saturday, and was called in as a witness. And this has to do with the delay or hold, pause, however you want to describe it, that happens regularly on foreign aid. But let's listen to his testimony, or at least a little bit of it, because I'm running out of time.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Ranking Member Nunez, and members of the committee. My name is David Holmes, and I'm a career Foreign Service Officer with the Department of State. Since August 2017, I have been the political counselor at the U.S. Embassy in Kyiv, Ukraine. While it is an honor to appear before you today, I want to make clear that I did not seek this opportunity to testify today. Since you determined that I may have something of value to these proceedings and issued a subpoena, it is my obligation to appear and to tell you what I know. Indeed, as Secretary Pompeo has stated, I hope everyone who testifies will do so truthfully and accurately. When they do, the oversight role will have been performed, and I think America will come to see what took place here. That is my only goal, to testify truthfully and accurately to enable you to perform that role. And to that end, I put together this statement to lay out, as best I can, my recollection of events that may be relevant to this matter. By way of background, I have spent my entire professional career as a Foreign Service officer. Like many of the dedicated public servants who have testified in these proceedings, my entire career has been in the service of my country. I'm a graduate of Pomona College in Claremont, California, and received degrees in international affairs from the University of St. Andrews in Scotland and from Princeton University's Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs. I joined the Foreign Service in 2002 through an apolitical, merit-based process under the George W. Bush administration. And I have proudly served administrations of both parties and worked for their appointees, both political and career. Prior to my current post in Kyiv, Ukraine, I served in the political and economic sections at the U.S. Embassy in Moscow, Russia. In Washington, I served on the National Security Council staff as director for Afghanistan and as a special assistant to the Undersecretary of State. My prior overseas assignments include New Delhi, India, Kabul, Afghanistan, Bogota, Colombia, and Pristina, Kosovo. As the political counselor at the U.S. Embassy in Kyiv, I lead the political section, covering Ukraine's internal politics, foreign relations, and security policies. And I serve as the senior policy and political ambassador to the advisor to the ambassador. The job of an embassy political counselor is to gather information about the host country's political landscape, to report back to Washington, to represent U.S. policies to foreign contacts, and to advise the ambassador on policy development and implementation. In this role, I'm a senior member of the embassy's country team and continually involved in addressing issues as they arise. I'm also often called upon to take notes in meetings involving the ambassador or visiting senior U.S. officials with Ukrainian counterparts. For this reason, I've been present in many of the meetings with President Zelensky and his administration, some of which may be germane to this inquiry. While I'm a political counselor at the embassy, it is important to note that I'm not a political appointee or engaged in U.S. politics in any way. It is not my job to cover or advise on U.S. politics. On the contrary, I'm an apolitical foreign policy professional, and my job is to focus on the politics of the country in which I serve so that we can better understand the local landscape and better advance U.S. national interests there. In fact, during the period that we'll cover today, my colleagues and I followed direct guidance from Ambassador Yovanovitch and Ambassador Taylor to focus on doing our jobs as foreign policy professionals and to stay clear of Washington politics.
Now, I got to interrupt it because of time constraints. He goes on for another roughly over half an hour. I want to get to the questions, though, that Devin Nunes asked both Fiona Hill and David Holmes.
Remember or their counsel for the first round of their 45-minute questions.
Thank the gentleman. I want to get a few basic facts on the table of individuals that were involved in the 2016 election, just to see who you know and who you've met with. So I'll start with you, Mr. Holmes. Have you met with or do you know Alexandra Chalupa?
Thank you. Holmes, could you put your microphone on?
No.
Do you know Nellie Orr? Have you met with Nellie Orr? Bruce Orr?
No.
Glenn Simpson?
No.
Thank you. Same.
Now, the reason he's asking these questions, they're the ones involved in the Christopher Steele dossier. Fusion GPS was hired to get opposition research by the Clinton campaign, and they hired Christopher Steele. So he's trying to make clear up front, do you know these people? Nellie Orr is the wife of, I forget his first name, Orr, that is at one time had the fourth highest job at the Department of Justice. Anyway, Nellie Orr was helping Christopher Steele with this dossier.
Question for you, Dr. Hill. Do you know or have you met with Alexandra Chalupa?
No.
Nellie Orr?
No.
Bruce Orr?
Only in the course of my previous position as the National Intelligence Officer for Russia, where he attended some of the meetings that I presided over.
Years ago?
That's a long time ago, correct.
Glenn Simpson?
No.
Dr. Hill, in your testimony, you said that, in your deposition, that Christopher Steele was your counterpart at one time. Is this correct?
That's correct, yes.
You testified that you met with Christopher Steele in 2016. I assume that's still correct?
That's correct, yes.
And the only thing we didn't get on that is, do you know about when that was in 2016 and how many times?
I'm afraid I don't. I actually had met with him, well, you asked me actually in the deposition when the most recent time that I had met with him in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And he retired from the British Intelligence Services in 2009, which is
right,
the same
I'm
time.
I'm asking about 2016.
2016, I don't recall, but I did meet with him some times before 2016.
But you don't remember the date?
I don't, I'm afraid, no.
Okay. You stated in your deposition that a colleague had showed you the Steele dossier before it was published. Who was that colleague?
That was one of my colleagues at the Brookings Institution.
And who was that?
That was the Brookings Institution President Strobe Talbot, who had been sent a copy of this.
And he shared it with you?
That was the day before it was published in BuzzFeed.
Now, I got the signal. I got to wrap it up. What I'm going to do is a part two here, have a separate show. Thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com. and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.